chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, and no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make there in the middle of it. Rest make there in the middle. We are. Rest make there in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. This is George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight. This is our second hour. We're going to be covering some of the current news. This is Saturday, July 13, 2013. The first hour we went into changing images of man, and I got off on some convoluted type of past also, so bear with me. But go in and download that now from thesecrettruth.com. That's our website. And read that white paper. It was written in the 70s. It had about 10 or 12 different authors, Margaret Mead, Joseph Campbell, and others. It was a Stanford Research Institute paper. And it actually covered, I'll just make a few comments here and then we'll move on. But what it did was it set out what kind of transformation needed to be done to transform the world into a new paradigm. One that Philosophia Perennius, one of all consciousness being, you know. Something along the lines of Plato's ideas, you know. And the cosmos and the thinking cosmos and the cosmos is one. But anyway, they're big supporters of Plato. And Plato wrote The Republic, which was a communist treatise on government and the way to govern. From the top level down, you know. But anyway, go ahead and download that, you know, Changing Images of Man, and then tune back in this program later if you wish to. But anyway, it'll be there available for you to download. Last week we covered a paper I had written called The Egyptian Plantation. And in that, I'll just review it a little while, and then we'll get into some current news commentary. But what I did there was I wrote a paper. I went back and did a little history of Egypt. And I started about the time that King Farouk was overthrown and Nasser took over. And that was about 1952 by the Free Officer Movement, of which he was ahead of. Nasser was. And then what he instituted there was a socialist government. And heavy on the bureaucracy later, which he finally realized, but had a heart attack and died quickly, suddenly, and wasn't able to try to remedy this overburdensome bureaucracy that had begun to plague the Egyptian economy. But anyway, read that. It's at the top, the Egyptian Plantation. Under King Farouk, the peasants were peasants, all right. They got 25% of the crop. The landowners got 75%, so that wasn't a very fair deal, was it? So then later on, Nasser had a land reform and gave the poor farmers a much better deal. And he was overall a very fine person. He's on that socialist side, which later on has led to problems today. We've got the Zimmerman trial. We'll comment more on it at the end. The final conclusions and whatever, we'll give an up-to-date, final view of that, of our opinion on that towards the end of the hour, and let you know what our thinking is on that. We've got Snowden over there that has decided to stay in the Soviet Union for temporarily, Sisik Sasalem within the Soviet Union. That's what came out today. Had he flown directly from Hong Kong to Venezuela, would have been the smartest of his choices at the time, and then sought asylum there, which probably he would have been granted because of the of Hugo Chavez's relationship with the United States and so forth. But instead, he elected to fly to the Soviet Union, which complicated things of getting out of there and flying to a Latin American country such as Venezuela. We thought we had him on a plane yesterday on an Aeroflot flight out of Moscow to Havana. But it actually flies a circular route, and it comes down through Canada, Newfoundland, and Canada on down through across Florida into Cuba. And that's the shortest route. There was weather yesterday in that area, so they routed many of the flights further to the east. This particular flight would just flew directly across the Atlantic. You know, you would think that it was a shortest route, you know, looking at a map. But it's the longest curvature of the earth is what they finally ended up taking. And thus, everybody was, while anticipation that Snowden was on that particular flight, there was a lot of news out. But as I understand it, the Western Atlantic is controlled by America. And, well, it's a complicated flight control system. But I believe America can go out so far from that East Coast with their defense system. So Obama's saying, no, I'm not going to send fighters up to take down a 29-year-old hacker, is what he's been reported as saying. But if that plane, if Snowden's plane ever got close to any of our military, I think Obama might do it. Who knows? But right, we're looking now at all kinds of breaking news coming in. We've still got the problem in Syria. Egypt temporarily is quieting down a little bit. We had those deaths the other day. They were shot down by government forces, the army, and they said police, and then they had some special secret police that were in there. One important fact that was noted in there was that most of this was reported at the hospital there after those 50-somewhat victims were brought in that died. And I think one of the doctors or the hospital staff noted, they took them to different hospitals, but many of the victims that died were shot in the head. So if the story goes that these troops shot wildly into the crowd, or indiscriminately into the crowd, they wouldn't have hit everyone in the head doing that. There would have been wounds all over, and maybe a few in the head, but not that many. But the news coming out seemed to indicate that many of the victims were shot in the head, which would denote a sniper attack on the crowd. So up high above buildings or wherever, behind corners of buildings or something, they were shooting people in the head with sniper rifles, probably. And that's how evil some of this stuff can get. The Egyptian situation over there is not going to settle down that easy, because the army, in my piece that I wrote, and go in there to thesecrettruth.com and read that. The piece I wrote indicates through different sources, very reliable sources, and I pulled quite a few different sources in to that, but it indicates that Egypt, the armed forces of Egypt, owns between, on the low end, 20% of the economy, and possibly up to 40% of the economy is owned by the military there. I also put into that article some of the industrial organizations that manufacture for the military. And there's one list that I got up. I actually pulled it up out of a site, you know what I mean, a map at the end of the particular organization. But some of the things that they manufacture are like river water purification plants, sewage water treatment plants, liquid alum and portable water tanks, seawater desalination, chlorine canisters, cylinders, electronic telephone exchanges, railroad freight wagons. They manufacture railroad gas taps, combustion systems. These are the civilian types of products that they're into manufacturing. Grain handling equipment, auto spare parts. production line equipment, stadium equipment and fiberglass, boats, 50 mile per hour boats in some cases. It's high powered speed boats, passenger cars, medical vehicles, firefighting and rescue vehicles. They manufacture vehicles of all kinds, trucks and three-quarter trucks in their outfitting. Water boosters, hydraulic ladder truck for firefighting and rescue, street sweeping and garbage compression trucks, medical equipment, hospital beds, sterilization equipment, and so forth. But anyway, go in there and go into thesecrettruth.com, and right at the top you're going to see the article that I'd written called the Egyptian Plantation, and it'll open your eyes. What I say at the end basically is something very, very simple. And that's that because the military has such a great percentage or a chunk of the Egyptian economy, and they're the ones that can call the shots on changing out these presidents because of coup d'etats, then you're not going to see them easily unseated from that power and are separated from that power. So reform coming out from the civilian side, the elected presidential side and the political side, I think is going to be very difficult to achieve, if nearly impossible. As long as the military has the monopoly of force and they own a tremendous amount of the economy, which they do, then you're not going to see them easily unseated and separated from that power nor those interests. And so that's where we're at on the Egyptian situation at this time. And I don't see any major change occurring anytime soon. The administration pressured the judge down there. This lady sitting on that Zimmerman trial, she's supposed to be a Democrat. She got real nasty with some of the defense attorneys yesterday about them pleading or requesting that he would not testify. And I think the attorneys are supposed to enter that request that to answer the court, is your defendant willing to testify or not, you know, and be called up on the stand, you know. And she made him say that he would not do it instead of relying on his defense attorneys. And I think protocol and court process would be that the attorneys would speak for the defendant about such matters. So would indicate that she's been aggressively and antagonistic with the defense the whole time. So she's not on their side. Another indication thing, too, that happened during the trial, and of course we'll expand this at towards the end, but just I'll make a quick note of it now, was that they gave the opportunity for the jury to make a decision on manslaughter. They even gave them a third-degree murder possibility, which was excluded there because of his age being 17. But anyway, the jury yesterday suspended for that day, and we're going to get some. I guess they'll return today, this morning. We'll give some more information on that before it's our broadcast is over. It's hard to say what's going on some of these things. The Defense Department, the Justice Department, Department of Justice, sent a few people down there, and we don't know what they were in there for. They're in there for community relations, and they had they turned in some of these expense bills, and Judicial Watch subpoenaed, actually made a Freedom of Information request and forced them to reveal some of the expenses that they paid for two or three Department of Justice individuals, officials down there. We don't know exactly what they did. I wasn't there. We're only getting secondary hearsay reports about what they were there for, and nobody's going to tell you the truth. They say community relations, but you don't know for sure. The airliner that crashed at San Francisco recently was coming in too low and at a slow speed. They're looking into it now, And it was a 777. And it was the first time that I've ever had any fatalities with that plane. The idea or the problem that existed was that no one in the cockpit, supposedly they had it on automatic speed control, but did they or did they not positively have it on there? There was controversy and contradictory things happening according to the flight recorder. The FDA, FAA was saying just recently. So we don't know for sure all of the answers on the 777. They're fortunate. The stewardesses have the right, without having to ask, I believe, the captain of the ship, of the plane, for permission to evacuate if they find, in their own estimation, that there is an imminent danger to the flight crew or to the flyers, you know, their passengers. So at any time, if the flight attendants perceive a danger to the passengers or anyone else on board, they're able to order right there those people, let's evacuate and pull the rip card and open those doors and slide down those chutes and so forth. But this one had a 90-second delay somewhere on it, and I noticed that someone did get burned. So would that 90 seconds enough to keep, would it have kept someone from being burned, see? So this thing does have problems. It's got pilot error all over it. So that's what it seems to be finally resolving out. It was pilot error. Either they didn't set the automatic speed control properly, they didn't activate it. It was set but not activated. No one noticed. They were coming in too low, too slow, and their tail hit the seawall, and the rest is history here, unfortunately. Snowden is seeking, like I said, temporary asylum in the Soviet Union. And then he's going to, until he can get a flight out of the Soviet Union to Venezuela. Venezuela has offered him a permanent asylum, you know, for sure. And he's seeking right now temporary asylum. He emerged from the airport. They call it a hideout, but I don't believe it was. Everyone knew he was there. But it was a transition area, a temporary area where you can not be under the control of the Russian, you know, agents there in the airport. So he has, it's the first glimpse that we've had of the self-declared leaker. He was in the transit zone since June 23rd. He met there earlier a small group of human rights campaigners and lawyers at an undisclosed part of the airport. The meeting was not made to the public. Some of those present posted details to Twitter indicating Tanya Lashina of Human Rights Watch, who released a handout image that she said was of Snowden. Lashina says Snowden would be making an official request to Russia for temporary asylum, adding that his condition was just fine. So he's going to seek temporary asylum in Russia. I think it's a mistake. But what else could he do if he couldn't fly out of Russia to Venezuela? It was problematic there getting him through those different countries. So, but Russia itself, now that they have control over him and can decide on this temporary asylum or not, they could extradite him to the United States very quickly. And Putin was saying something about if they provided asylum for him, he would have to quit releasing information that was harmful to the Russian and their American friends. So I don't know exactly what he meant by that. Of course, we're getting all of this in translations and so forth. So we don't always know exactly what they mean by these kinds of statements that they issue. But anyway, that's the latest on Snowden. Snowden comes from a long line of, actually, there have been several whistleblowers NSA whistleblowers over the last few years, and it's surprising that actually some of the people that had careers there at NSA have come out and done some whistleblowing. So he's not the actual first one that has outed information that life career NSA personnel have come out with. So there have been a number over the years, and the whistleblowers have revealed many of these programs. I mean, these programs that they've been, I got information way back several years ago. I can't remember exactly what year it was. It had to be in the 90s somewhere. But a friend of mine was at a meeting inside of a telephone building. I won't say where it is. It's in the Midwest. I'm not going to tell you the city. He was in there working on his computer, and then all of a sudden, he went back. He left to go to the restroom or talk to someone and came back in a little while, and they had cordoned the area off, and he couldn't go in there any further. And they told him, well, what kind of computer did you have? He told him, he said, well, here, go down to the office and they'll write you a check for it. So they went down there and wrote him a check for the type of computer he had to buy, a brand new one, but he had work on it and stuff. So they were putting in some of these interfaces, we think, at the time. And so they started doing this years before 9/11. And as a result, they've had these surveillance programs out there for a number of years, ensconced inside these telephone companies. They had to do that to pick up some of the, direct information and data directly off the line. The telephone company has a tremendous infrastructure of long-distance service, and these are trunk lines that run cross-country. And these trunk lines are actually carry digital information. They don't, carry just voice and stuff. It's all digitized. So you might be picking up a phone, and when you're speaking into it initially, that could be an analog signal going into that particular phone. But by the time it gets into the phone system, or what they call a telephone company connection switching station, and that's what they mean by telephone company. They have switching stations out in outlying areas. And so the normal lines go into that. And then they'll transform that and into a digital signal. And then right there, it's into what they call the digital cloud. And once it's in that digital cloud, then far as distance goes, it's nothing. Because what they finally worked out years ago was that they have peering points across the country where infrastructure is owned by AT&T and Verizon might own some other infrastructure. And what they're doing, they're mating up that infrastructure in what they call peering points, and they're exchanging data information. And what they're doing is they're carrying each other's data on their particular infrastructure lines at no cost. So basically, the internet started out with proprietary telephone lines using modems, and BBS invented a modem out of Boston, and it was mainly defense-oriented organizations, institutions working with each other on defense projects with the government, with the federal government. And then it expanded from there to the university systems, and they had proprietary lines there. And then someone came up with a bright idea. Well, we've got this long-distance telephone company. Why don't we just exchange data free? The voice and stuff will still be told, cost. It'll be a cost every long-distance phone call. But we'll just start carrying each other's data, and we'll call that the Internet. And so, basically, they started carrying each other's data information, and boom, we had the Internet all of a sudden just rear its head just instantly. So the we've had several programs over the years. We had a terrorist surveillance program that was under George W. Bush administration, and they got into a really problem on that because it was a warrantless surveillance system. I mean, they were going in, and this was right after 9/11. So a lot of things happened because of 9/11. And finally, they backed off, and then they got this special court, FISA court. And then, but the problem with that is that it's secret. It meets in secret. It can't reveal what's happening in there because it's all secret. So how in the heck can it be a guard dog for the public that way? We don't have behind secrecy. I guess you can hide about anything that you want. See, and therein lies the real problem of the system. We had Wayne Mattson a number of months ago with us, and he was speaking about a trade organization now that is, to him, he said it's a very important and it's very dangerous. And he seemed to indicate at the time that what they call the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement was underway. And this is a partnership agreement with certain countries bordering on the Pacific Ocean. So it's called Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. And he seemed to indicate at that time that it was a very dangerous organization. And so I went in and I did research on this and began to see it. They're approaching it from an intellectual viewpoint basis. And that's how they create some of the first ideas that we need this international agreement, see. And there's going to be an 18th round of the Trans-Pacific Partnership negotiations set for Kota Kinabalu, Malaysia, which will be July 15th and the 24th. That's coming up just Monday. Okay, so we've got today is Saturday, 13th, 14th, Monday, 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th. Oh, we've got most of next week is when that's going to occur on this Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. But the problem with some of this stuff is that it's very, very dangerous from a viewpoint of they're creating negotiations and over and above transnational or supranational, over and above normal agreements between countries. They're actually creating agreements between large corporate entities, and this is where it becomes very, very dangerous, because then they'll start overriding, okay, the actual federal law or national laws that normally you would think that you would come under and have some kind of relief that would be granted for some kind of a contractual difference or an agreement. But in the system that they're setting up, there's going to be boards, and there's going to be like administrative law type approaches where there'll be boards set up and arbitration type councils to where you'll have to go in, if there's a business dispute, go into some kind of a corporate administrative law type of mechanism, and that's not even, it won't be even in your own court, see? So it's not going to even be constitutional as far as the United States is concerned. And the problem with some of this too is that they were hiding. They've been hiding some of the drafts. There have been drafts that have leaked out, okay? And these drafts would indicate that there are real problems with this Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. And as a result, there are real problems with it, then we need to really look at this very closely. The Freedom Frontier has a... I believe they did a special on this particular, I'll find it here in a second, and find out what's going on that Electronic Freedom Frontiers. Here we go. And they had a pretty good treatment of it on their site. So I'll give you something to go in here. And they're really fighters for certain types of things like this. And this Trans-Pacific partnership agreement is one of the things that they have really been fighting tooth and nail. And Wayne Mattson is one of the best journalists around, and he's really a fine journalist, and he really knows what's going on. He works out of Washington, D.C. WayneMattson.org, I think, is his website. And as a result, he's put forward, and he's way ahead of most people on much of these going-ons of these kinds of things. You just can't get better than him on some of this. He's very insightful, very well-spoken, and he writes very well. He's a professional journalist. Charlotte and I have been writing. Charlotte is quite good at writing herself. Me, I'm not good. I write because I need to write. But I feel compelled to write. I'm not really. Okay, here we go. If you go in to the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and I'll put this up on our website for a click-off here, so you'll be able to see it on Saturday when you listen to this program on the air broadcast. Or if you can come into the site before that, we'll probably have that stuff up ready for you tonight sometime. We'll have it up there before Saturday. Anyway, the Electronic Freedom Frontier is HTTPS. This is one of their protected sites. /www.eff.org/issues/TPP. But anyway, we'll put this up on our site so you can come in there and get that. But what it amounts to is that there are problems with this on many levels, and it overrides national state law. So you're not going to get a fair shake through us participating in this. If you're a businessman and you're a small businessman out here, this is for large corporate interests. This is not going to benefit some small businessman here in Austin or somewhere else throughout the nation. They have like anti-counterfeiting trade agreements going to be built into there, and Digital Millennium Copyright Acts, but also it's going to tighten up on all these copyrights, so you as a website developer or a website will not be as easily able to put into your website certain click-offs and hypertext links, and that's another thing that they'll always tighten up on with these kinds of trade agreements. They've had many of these trade agreements before. NAFTA took many of our jobs into Mexico. We lost hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of jobs to Mexico. H. Ross Perot says on his infomercials, he said, "Hear the sucking of the jobs in south of the border." And he was right. Everybody laughed at him, made fun of him. And H. Ross Perot was right as rain on these trade agreements. So he knows what's going on, and there are other people out there that know what's going on. So go in here to this Freedom Frontier Electronic Frontier Foundation, the www.eff.org, and drill down into that Trans-Pacific Trade Partnership Agreement, and you're going to be very, very unhappily surprised. You're going to be surprised, all right, because there's so much going on out here that it's just unbelievable. Getting back to this surveillance problem, Panopticon, I think I touched on this last week maybe too, but need to repeat it. Panopticon, P-A-N-O-P-T-I-C-O-N, Panopticon, was a term that Jeremy Bentham conjured up in England. And it was to describe a prison that you could observe all the prisoners without being observed from one central point. Well, basically, in essence, they're building a panopticon worldwide to observe everyone and put them under surveillance, and just to see if whether their business interests are being threatened or their political interests or whatever. It's the ultimate 1984, you know what I mean, Brave New World, you know, scenario. And we've got to overcome this. I think Aldous Huxley wrote Brave New World, and then, you know, the 1984 book set out an earlier example of systems of tyranny. When I wrote the article on Egypt, I ended it with 1984, because Baradei was being considered for prime minister at one time, and he met with some of the generals and talked to them and was asking them some questions about them reinstalling, you could say, a past attorney general, a national attorney general, back into the government. But it was an attorney general that had prosecuted many cases against the Islamists, Brotherhood, Muslim Brotherhood, and other Islamists throughout Egypt. And so he was asking these generals a question, I'm glad to be considered for prime minister, but what about this past Mahmoud is his name, Abdel Mahmoud was the appointee that had been removed by President Morsi, and then the generals had put him back in a day before they dismissed President Morsi. Well, El-Baradei was saying, Mohammed El-Baradei was asking them about what was going on behind the scenes. And here's what El-Baradei reported to the press. He said the generals told him and assured him that this time would be different because they intended to operate as an institution and a civilian democracy with respect for due process and the rule of law. Well, right there, they disregarded the rule of law and due process when they dismissed Morsi with a military coup d'etat. I mean, what are they talking about? And, of course, I wrote right below that, a few contradictions after having ignored due process and the rule of law just recently in dismissing President Morsi. It's 1984 in Egypt. And that's what I truly believe. It's, you've got the military over there. They're not willing to relinquish any of their real power and interest. They've got tremendous billions of dollars of business interest. I just read off a short list of some of the products that they manufacture over there. And so they're not going to give up that power and those manufacturing interests. And they are into resorts, too. They're not only into, manufacturing. They run resorts. They have land. I don't know. We don't know because their budget is secret about their interest. So what they're doing is they're hiding behind national security, these business interests that they have. So what are we going to do? Some civilian president comes in there, duly elected by the people. Morsi was trying to move too quickly. Plus, back in November of last year, Morsi came up with these dictates, these presidential decrees, trying to exempt him from any oversight of any judiciary whatsoever. And all the red flags went up. Even some friendly people saw that as a threat to their freedoms. So even some of the friendly people to him before that turned against him. And then the military was more easily to move him out, and probably we know that there was money funded to certain groups in Egypt from the United States that helped to move him out, and he was in constant contact with our Secretary of Defense, Chuck Hagel, and I don't know if he talked to Kerry that much during this Egyptian crisis over there. But we can't forget that those people that were shot down outside that compound over there were shot in the head. Many of them were shot in the head, so that meant that there were snipers out there. So we've got a big, big government. It's out of control. It's been giving police powers way over and above what they should have ever been granted. They're building. They've got armored. There was a while back where I was doing a remote broadcast at a restaurant that I frequent quite often. It's here in South Austin. And there was a fight going on. There was a difference of opinion and someone was threatening someone else, supposedly, an apartment project in behind this restaurant. So I was sitting out doing a remote broadcast out on the patio area, and I was live on GCN. I'm thinking I had Bob Chapman on the line that night, and all of a sudden, all of these people show up. There was about 40 or 50 SWAT team members. They had two armored vehicles. They had a motor home that was acting as a communications command center. There was a helicopter overseas. There was a robot there that could take out explosives type of material. I mean, they called in at least 40 or 50. There were people that indicated that came in from Fort Hood. I saw some of their insignia and so forth. There was Homeland Security. There was military personnel from Fort Hood. I mean, this thing had the earmarks of a full-blown, you know what I mean, exercise. And they took one guy away that had a screwdriver, and someone said he threatened them with a screwdriver or something like that in an apartment project behind this restaurant that I was doing a live remote broadcast from. I mean, it's totally out of control. Next Wednesday, as I understand, so those that are interested in listening to some of the best of some really fine shows that Alex has on, he's going to have on as guest Mike Hansen at 12 noon on Wednesday. And Alex and Mike Hansen years ago were out there on the investigative trail exposing this New World Order military law and martial law exercises. They were down in Kingsville one time, down in San Antonio, and different other places. I remember one time Mike Hansen had a bus stopped out here along Interstate 35, and they were giving him a hassle out there. But anyway, next Wednesday on the Alex Jones Show, Infowar.com, you can listen to an interview there. Well, actually, it'll be some reminiscing. This is going to be a really, because they set the precedent for investigative reporting in this area, it's going to be really a fine exchange between Mike Hansen and Alex Jones. Both of them, fearless people, they got out there, they cared about the public, and they started reporting what was going on these these so-called drills and exercises. And in one in Kingsville, they had these flashbang things going off everywhere and scaring the hell out of people. Sometimes they wouldn't even notify them, the townspeople, exactly what was going on at the time. So, I mean, gosh, it got you know, contentious there at times. They're saying that Obama is holding secret meetings with a liberal journalist. I mean, what's going on in the country here? Secret meetings, the president, and so with a liberal journalist. I mean, the White House holds Obamacare background briefings with liberal reporters. So they're going to try to, they've already given exemption going out for the institution, the businesses, a year in having to implement this thing. Now the Congress is upset, and the House is saying, well, if you exempt businesses, institutions from going out, then you're going to have to do individuals the same way. So they've enacted some legislation and lobbying in an effort to do that. Right now, we've got a blogger here. We've got the Daily Caller, and they're saying that the White House held a background briefing Friday to discuss Obamacare implementation with a handful of journalists from liberal and progressive outlets. What does that mean, liberal and progressive outlets? Well, that's not us, Mr. President, is it?
Well, Mr. President, everything is secret. We know, so I guess you can... You've got the executive power to hold, you know, meetings with whoever you want to call the press. So, I mean, that's just your prerogative. So on and on it goes. Payback. Rupert Murdoch could face charges in the USA. Man, I tell you what. you do enough out there and you step on enough toes, and there might be some blowback. It's saying here, the Telegraph out of London, Rupert Murdoch could face criminal charges in America after he secretly filmed telling journalists at his newspapers that bribing police officers for stories was the culture of Fleet Street. So he was saying, hey, this is the culture of Fleet Street. And now they're saying, hey, maybe we can prosecute him on that, you know. War of words with Fox News. I guess the White House has been at war with Fox for a while. And they're escalating that war now with Fox News, calling Fox News a wing of the Republican Party. Well, I wouldn't call it a wing of the Republican Party, because what actually happened was they helped cut Ron Paul's throat, the powers that control the Republican Party. So I would, you know, it might be a wing of the whatever, of the power group that control the Republican Party, but I wouldn't exactly characterize it in that way. But I mean, some people could, you know, they probably characterize it in a lot of different ways. This surveillance thing, getting back to it. Oh, okay. We've got Kokesh. He's held without bond, potentially facing an armed sedition charge, is saying. Okay, a man, you know, loads a shotgun in the D.C. area. Are you kidding me? I mean, you know, we've got real, real traitors running around, and they're spending their time trying to go after him. Well, you know, he could have maybe kept it a little cooler. It could have been a little cooler and not done outrageous things like this. To me, it's sensationalism. But he has a right anywhere, I think, in this country to load a shotgun at any time under any circumstances, as long as he's not out there shooting people. So, but they're out there trying to find charges, and looks like they might be pretty close to getting some charges this time. You just can't put yourself, make yourself vulnerable. In this society, it got like this in Nazi Germany also, before World War II, was that they start looking for things to indict you on and to take you in and arrest you on. And if you said anything just off color or something, you were against the government. And Nacht und Fog is one of the programs the Nazis had, where they disappeared people in the middle of the night. I mean, you know, are they going to do that here? Nacht und Nebel was what it was called. Nacht und is un, and then Nebel, N-E-B-E-L, is fog, I believe. So it was called Nacht und Nebel, and it was Night and Fog is what they called it. It was a direct reference to a Tarnhelm spell from Wagner's Rheingold. It was a directive of Hitler on 7th of December 1941 that was originally intended to winnow out all political activists and resistance helpers. Anyone endangering German security throughout Nazi Germany occupied territory. 2 months later, Armed Forces High Command Field Marshal Wilhelm Keitel expanded it to include all persons in occupied countries who had been taken into custody and who were still alive 8 days later. The decree was meant to intimidate local populations into submission by denying friends and families of the missing any knowledge of their whereabouts or their fate. The prisoners were secretly transported to Germany, vanishing without trace. In 1945, the seized Sicherheitsdienst SD records were found to include merely names and the initials NN, Nacht und Nebel. Even the sites of graves were unchronicled. To this day, it is not known how many thousands of people disappeared as a result of this order. Are we going down the same path? I hope not. But we've got to be very careful and look at Congress and see these new laws. The National Defense Authorization Act Could it be used like nocturnal navel, night and fog? Some people have said so, and both parties enacted that into law. The Tea Party people, you've got to look at them in a way that we never have looked at them before, in a way that, hey, do you get it yet? Do you really understand? Or are you also being pulled into this, you know what I mean, nightmare of armed terrorists attacking America, and then we've got to respond with a crackdown on Americans that haven't done anything? They're just out there trying to make a living and load their weapons. Yeah, okay, he was trying to load a weapon in downtown Washington. What about it? Who cares? I think he has a right to do it. Why make a big deal out of it? You know? Why go in there and sedition? Are you kidding? This is way, way taking something, even if it was a sensational act to draw attention, it's way, way far out there to even talk about sedition or anything even close. We have people, yeah, that are traitors, all right, and we need to investigate 9/11, get an honest investigation of that, just to see, you know, who was really involved in that deal. But anyways, night on fog was no good. It did happen. They just disappeared, people. And he's saying that barefoot and wearing the same shorts he was arrested in, combat veteran Kokesh, veteran radio host and freedom activist Adam Kokesh, is still being held without bond in a frigid and infested jail cell less than 50 square feet in size. Kokesh is currently charged with possession of a Schedule 1 or 2 drug and a possession of a Schedule 1 or 2 drug while in possession of a firearm. A sheriff's deputy informed Kokesh, held at the Fairfax County Adult Detention Center, that authorities are also considering to charge him with armed sedition and illegal transportation of a firearm. Sedition is defined as inciting rebellion against the authority of a state or monarch. Kokesh was allowed a phone call to his father, but the conversation was monitored by a sheriff's deputy standing there the entire time. So anyway, that is what's going on in Kokesh's life. We might have gotten a little feed over off of one of the websites that we're monitoring when we're on live on air here. So we'll just go ahead and we can't cut that out. But anyway, they'll take someone like Kokesh and make a big deal out of it. And then some very important offense, they won't do anything about. So, I mean, it doesn't make sense sometimes as to what they're doing out there. And there's no consistency at times between what they should or shouldn't do, or who they should or shouldn't do things to. We've got other breaking news here. We've got these rebel factions over there that are saying that the Russians are saying that they found sarin gas, and they can prove that the rebels in Syria had used it in several instances. When we go back to Benghazi, we go back to the Northeast Intelligence Network, and which brought out the fact back in October of last year that smuggling was being done through that annex, CIA annex in Benghazi, of Libyan arms into the rebels. And the rebels, it was rumored then, were going to use some of those weapons and chemical weapons to mount some kind of a false flag in Syria itself and blame it on the government. The Syrian government would have no motivation whatsoever to be attacking anyone with any chemical weapons, especially since the United States has put them on alert, that alert, that warning and alert, that this would be a red line upon which we would not let them cross, or we would go in with a full support of the rebels, maybe even a NATO attack. The Russians are still there, so we're not going to see much happen in Syria right now. In fact, the Syrians in Homs recently, they had a victory, and there are other areas that they've recaptured from the rebels. And so the Syrian government is growing stronger in this time, at this time.
in this so-called Civil War. We have evidence, people going back have been over there that said that it was an agent provocateur thing originally. So the Zimmerman trial, we're trying to get more information on that. We don't have any right now. We did mention earlier that Snowden is going to seek temporary asylum in Russia. We've got a couple of ladies helping him arrange that. His flight, the problem is that he's having a hard time getting out. Oh, just a recent law just passed in California would enable people that are non-citizens to man the polls. Now, I mean, is that for real or what? I picked it up on one of these network news, you know, programs. So now we've got news here about Napolitano, that she's going to go. She's leaving Homeland Security post, and she's done enough damage there. So Janet Napolitano said Friday she will resign as Homeland Security Secretary, departure of a key cabinet member that could complicate immigration policies in Congress. I think it's going to help everyone in the Obama administration complicate things. And like Fast and Furious, yeah, we got good agents that died because of that, because of their policies and their little operations and special exercises or whatever you want to call them. So, anyway, Napolitano is going to resign and take over as head of the University of California, I think is what they're saying now. I mean, are you kidding me, huh? She's going to leave her post. Her announcement is given to Congress wrestles, and I think she's been selected to head up the University of California system. Yeah, that's what she's going to do. Boy, that is something, isn't it? Boy, they just kick them upstairs. The worst job they do, they just give them an elevation and give them promotions because they know that they did the job to help destroy the country, I guess. And then you got to always go into court and argue for all these secret courts and this national security and withhold everything you can. Only did Judicial Watch force them out on some of these expenses of those guys that went down and did community service work on the Zimmerman thing, working for the Justice Department, community work. What is that about? Well, when they're saying community work, that could mean that they're going down there to aggravate it, promote it, but not for truth. They're working down there for like Jesse Jackson does, you know. Of course, his son went to prison recently for, you know, violations. So I guess some of these people can get caught and they'll send them up anyway. You know, I guess they're just too flagrant with the violations. They've got a gun carry law in Illinois now. They need that because of all the problems that they've had up there recently. So anyway, we're going to wish everybody have a good weekend, and we'll be seeing you next weekend. On 90.1 FM. Thank you for listening, and good night, and God bless everyone. Bye-bye.